this Thursday, I was at a meeting with about our new building and with some other people. And the first thing you often do in these meetings is exchange business cards. That's just a common thing at when you meet with people that you don't know. And the guy that I gave my business card to it looked at it for a little while, and he said, "That's a nice logo." He says, "Is that to symbolize that you're really the community of God woven together?" I went, "Yes, he got it." And I said, "Exactly, you are exactly right. That is what we were trying to symbolize with that." And it was just, it was fun to be in a place and to be gathered together where somebody looked at it. And he looked at it really intently and thought about it and said that. He didn't pick up on the Q idea, that it looks kind of like a Q. He just got the whole community of God. You're a community of God. People woven together. And he said that, woven together. So it was kind of fun. I thought I'd share that with you. Our scripture this morning is found in John chapter 2. I'm going to begin reading with verse 13. The Passover of the Jews was near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and the money changers seated at their table. Making a whip of cords, he drove them out of the temple, both the sheep and the cattle. He also poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. He told those who were selling the doves, "Take those things out of here. Stop making my Father's house a marketplace." His disciples remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." The Jews then said to him, "What sign can you show us for doing this?" Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." The Jews then said, "This temple has been under construction for 46 years, and will you raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking of the temple of his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scripture and the word that Jesus had spoken. When he was in Jerusalem during the Passover festival, many believed in his name because they saw the signs that he was doing. But Jesus, on his part, would not entrust himself to them because he knew all people and needed no one to testify about anyone, for he himself knew what was in everyone. So Jesus went to Jerusalem for the Passover, along with all good Jews in that day. Passover was a really big deal. It celebrated liberation and freedom and rescue from slavery. We read in the Old Testament, in the book of Exodus, about how the Israelites were slaves in Egypt, and they worked at hard labor under the Egyptian overseers, and the Egyptian overseers were upset that they kept multiplying and there were more and more people, and it seemed like the harder they worked them, the harder they were taskmasters, the more the people multiplied. And so God released the people from slavery through Moses and through his efforts. But in particular, there was this time when the angel of death passed over Egypt, killing the firstborn son of every family. And the Israelites that put the blood of the lamb on their doors were exempt from this angel of death taking their firstborn. They were to eat roasted lamb with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. And the blood on the lamb was on the door. Blood of the lamb on the door was a sign that they followed God's instructions. When the firstborn son of Pharaoh and the firstborn son of all the Egyptians were killed, Pharaoh sent the Israelites out of Egypt to freedom. With the instruction that they were to celebrate this Passover feast and resulting freedom every year, that they were not to forget that God had freed his people. So now we fast forward to the New Testament, and people from all over come to celebrate the Passover in the temple, and it was very, very crowded. The temple was the center of life in Israel in ways that the church as we know it never was. And I don't just mean because we're in a post-Christian era and the center of life has shifted from the church. I mean it was the center of everything of life for the Israelites. It was a center of worship, of music, of politics, of society, of celebration, of mourning. Really, everything really focused around the temple for the Israelites. There wasn't the same separation of church and state as we know it today. It was, and it just was really in the middle of everything for them. And above all of that, it was the place where God dwelt, where the God of Israel dwelt and spoke to the people. So this was a very, very important place. Their sense of the presence of God was really focused on being present in the temple and gathering in this place. And for the priests that went into the Holy of Holies and into that place to enter before God was a particular place. We don't have anything like that sense of place for us today, especially with regard to church. So during the Passover, people came from all over, not just from the neighboring towns or so, but even from outside of the country. They came from far and wide to gather at the temple for this Passover celebration. They would have needed a place to stay, food to eat, all of those things. You travel at a long distance and join in this celebration. And so things were needed. So it was a profitable time for businesses as they were able to offer their wares, offer, sell food, provide housing, all of those kinds of things as people came to the temple for Passover. The people also came to the temple to do their Jewish rituals, to offer sacrifices, and they had to pay a temple tax. Those who came from a long distance really couldn't bring all their sacrificial animals with them and do all of that. And so businesses had them for sale for a nice profit. Not only did they need to buy animals, they needed the right kind of money. They were not allowed to use Roman money or foreign money. Roman money would have had Caesar on it, and they weren't allowed to use money with the face of Caesar on it in order to pay their temple tax and to do these things within the temple. So they needed temple shekels. So again, businesses met that need. They provided money changers to exchange the money from a foreign currency or Roman currency into the temple shekels so that they could use it in the when they went into the temple. Again, for a nice profit. And for the poor, that was a real problem because as the demand was great, the prices reflected that demand and prices rose, and that was a difficult thing. The practice of selling sacrificial animals and exchanging money was actually okay. It was not a bad thing. It was the way in which it was done. At the expense of the people, especially the poor, the temple, the priests, and the businesses were getting rich. And this really wasn't what God intended for this place where God dwells, the temple. It was out of hand. It was being misused from its intended purpose. So Jesus appears for the Passover and sees what's happening. It only takes a glance to know that things are not right here, that it's kind of out of control and things are wrong. But the crowd is so large, and there is so much happening all over the place that no one hears. I mean, he could yell and make himself hoarse yelling, and it would not have changed anything. It wouldn't disrupt what was going on because people are so intent on doing their what they're doing. Think of being at a fair, you know, with people, crowds of people being around, and trying to change the whole crowd and get them to do something else would be quite difficult. He can't yell loud enough to make a real difference. So he picks up cords and puts them together as a whip, intending to dissipate the crowd. Now, I don't think it was that he's trying to hit people or to hit animals. That's often what we think, you know, a whip is used for those kinds of difficult purposes. But he needs to do something to create a commotion in order to disrupt things. And a well-placed crack of the whip would cause the animals to stampede and run away. And so that happened. He did that. And in the process, tables are overturned, food is spilled, money scatters, people run, and there's mass chaos, really ending the profitability of the money changers and the business people that had gathered in the temple for the day to sell their wares. It quickly ends everything. Not only was the place a mess, but the animals were gone, and it was a free-for-all. He specifically tells the dove merchants to leave, because doves were for the poor that couldn't afford a sacrificial lamb or a cow or something of more substance. And Jesus condemns them for turning the temple or God's house into a marketplace. After the ruckus begins to settle, the merchants try to gather up what's left while muttering at Jesus. And they didn't ask for an explanation. They didn't really condemn him for his actions. I think they knew that they were out of hand, that they had pushed their limits, that they had gone beyond what was reasonable. But they didn't like being called on it. They didn't like losing their profitable income. So they asked about Jesus' authority to take up such action. Why did you do this? What gives you the authority to do this? By what sign did you do this? But Jesus doesn't answer them directly. He says, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." Well, that makes them mad. The temple, this temple, the very center of their lives, took 46 years to build. It's Herod's temple, and he's been working on it for a long time. And you're just going to tear it down and raise it up in 3 days? This doesn't make any sense. But they missed the point. Jesus is pointing them to something new here. The temple, as they know it, is corrupt and no longer serves its purposes. But in John 1, we've been reading about this Jesus, the Logos made flesh, the Lamb of God. And this is the new Passover. Jesus' death and resurrection is the reality to which the Passover points. Really, they don't understand it yet, but Jesus gives new meaning and purpose to Passover, to what it's about, to celebrate this Passover celebration that has been so much a part of their culture for so many years. The intended purpose of the temple was being abused, and so Jesus confronted them. The intended purpose of Passover was being abused, and so Jesus confronted them. I wonder if Jesus were here today, what he would confront. Where have we gotten off track and lost our way and forgotten our purposes? Where do we benefit at the expense of others? But also, where do we stop short of living into our full potential and purpose? Our attitudes towards the poor and homeless or the forgotten people. You know, God made provision for the poor, yet the people didn't always follow God's leading. I think the same thing is true today. We scramble to avoid paying taxes and helping those who have less. And creditors use any means, even illegal means, to force people to pay. We released the slaves many years ago, yet our systems perpetuate systemic racism. The Passover celebrated liberation and freedom and rescue from slavery in Egypt. Yet it had become anything but liberation, freedom, and rescue for slavery in the day of Jesus. In a sense, it is my good news, not your good news. It's my freedom that we're celebrating, not your freedom. But Passover was also about being the people of God, a people that followed God. Being a people that would listen and be faithful to do God's leadings and gather and wait and allow God to lead them as a people. To be a blessing to others and to show the nations around them what it was like to be a people that followed God. We gather as a people of God here. We gather to worship and to bless each other as ministers. So how do our purposes as North Seattle Friends Church impact our decisions? About the building, about our finances, about our energy, about our time. What are our purposes as a people as we gather? And do we take those into account in what we do together? We enjoy a huge benefit of not paying property taxes because we're a public benefit. So how do we see ourselves as a public benefit? How do we see ourselves as blessing the community around us? One of the ways we do that is by making our property available to others to rent at a pretty nominal cost. It is true that there are those gathered in the fellowship hall this morning for a freedom project. And we bless them in their ability to gather and to do that. We do ministry like the stone soup quilts that we bless and send out. And we're sending out each one of us in a daily thing, whether it be as business people or as teachers or childcare people or artists. In incredible numerous ways, we are facilitating each other to do that thing that we're called to that tells who God is as we go forth in this world. But I think we want to always remember and ask ourselves, is our good news for others? Is our good news for others? Jesus calls us to focus on God's purposes, not our own. When Jesus answers their question about why did you do this? Under what authority? And Jesus says, destroy the temple and in 3 days I will raise it up. He's looking to God's purposes rather than human purposes. We get caught up in the functional human purposes of a place. It is for this that we have this building. And yet, it isn't about the building. It's about the people that have gathered to become the people of God. It's about the ministries that we're called to release among each of us. It's about being faithful to be this people. Yes, this is a home in which we gather. This is a place in which we gather to celebrate. And the right place facilitates our ministry. Patty's looking forward to a new place where her quilt room won't be so crowded and where there's not enough spaces to put everything. We look forward to being able to spread out and to have the kind of space that we need to do the things that we're called to do. That is very true. But we want to be about following God's purposes in our lives all the time and about releasing ministry rather than about owning possessions just for the sake of owning possessions. We ask the same thing personally about everything. Personally, in our own lives, about our home, our car, our money, our life, our job, our recreation, a 401k, everything that is a part of us. What is its intended purpose? And am I being faithful to its intended purposes? I think we also need to remember that it isn't always minimalist. We sometimes think that being faithful to God's purposes means that I have less so that I can give it all away. And yet I think sometimes that limits us at being able to do the things that we're called to do. The gift of hospitality needs space to welcome others. It needs a place to do that. And so sometimes it's about more than less. A few years ago, Ernie and Muriel were here and had like four cars. And the smallest car held like seven people. But it was because they had this ministry of hauling people. And as they got older, they did that less. But they brought, over the years, many, many, many people to church. They carried people. Ernie drove for seniors and took them places. They had a van so that they could carry people and go places. They had a motorhome so that they could go up to Quaker Cove and stay at Quaker Cove and be a part of ministry there and yet have their own space for them. So every one of those vehicles had a purpose, and it lived into those purposes as long as they needed it. When they didn't need it and life changed for them, in time Ernie was down to one car until he no longer could even drive that car. So time changes, but being faithful to have what we need to do the thing that we're called to do. Sometimes things go beyond their purpose. The job or the 401k becomes my security. As long as I have this job that pays me this much money and I have this 401k, then I'm okay. And that becomes my security rather than the sense of God is my security and I trust God for life, for very breath, for the ability to do the job that I'm called to do. And so shifting things and getting things out of their God-given purpose, their perspective, can sometimes get us in trouble. Sometimes our jobs need to change. That job fit my needs for this particular time, but it no longer serves its purpose in me well. And I need to release and do another job. You think about like when you're in school and you get a job to kind of put yourself through school, and you get out of school and you shift, and that job no longer has the same purpose and so forth in our lives, and we shift to other ways of doing things. Or think about recreation or vacation. You know, if we have too little time off, we're not recreated. We're not renewed and have a new spirit to be able to go forth and do the things that we're called to do. But too much, and it becomes an escape from life and a sense of denying that I have purpose, and we're just become players and the kind of the stereotypical rich playboy personality that does whatever they choose. So things sometimes get out of bounds, and we call it back to its intended purposes. I think that's actually what Jesus was doing that day in the temple. Things had gotten out of bounds. They were off track. And Jesus is saying, this isn't why you've gathered for Passover. This isn't why you come to the temple. You've gotten things out of bounds, out of whack. And I'm calling it back to its intended purposes. To be a place where you gather to worship God. To be a place where you celebrate your freedom from Egypt and from slavery. To be a place where you work together to follow me and to be my people. And to be faithful to that journey. So I call us in our own lives to take stock from time to time of, when have things shifted, and are there things in my life that are out of bounds, either too little or too large, so that they don't fulfill their God-intended purpose for me? And that we call it back to its intended purpose, either to grow and take its full place, or to shrink and come back to its right size. So it's a constant repurposing and listening to how we are to be faithful to live out God's purposes in our church, in our lives, in our communities, in our workplaces, in every sphere of where we are. And I think it's really wisdom for us to pause and think. We know often when things kind of get top heavy and out of control and out of balance. And when we need to say, no, it's time to reconsider, to repurpose, to step back and ask, God, how am I to move forward here? How am I to allow this to take its right-sized place in me, in my community, in whatever realm in which we find ourselves? Let's wait in open worship as we listen, as we invite God's Spirit to settle upon us and to help us reconsider how it is that we live into our God-intended purposes.